You are listening to The Edge, AM 1550, WURP, Braddock, Pittsburgh.
Good morning, Pittsburgh diners and travelers. Good afternoon to our overseas listeners. Good morning, Peter.
It's hard to believe it's Sunday morning again.
How do
we do this every week? I can't imagine how we do it. And not only that, but we have a guest on the phone already up early on Sunday morning to talk to us about his wonderful product. Why don't you go ahead and introduce him, Ann?
Yes, Nico Klancic. Is it Nico?
Yes, Nico.
Yeah, Nico, you have an extraordinary product. It's called E4B.
Yes.
A fascinating history of your company, your development, and you. I mean, you're still in college?
Yes, I'm still in college. I'm senior this year. I'm at Fordham University in New York.
And are you still playing basketball?
No, not anymore, because now I'm too busy with E4B.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, yes. Well, this E4B is a fabulous product. Describe it to us, please.
Thank you very much. Yeah, first of all, E4B stands for Easy for Busy. So it's easy to use for busy people. And it's all natural, 100% fruit puree in a really unique pouch. The pouch was developed for NASA astronauts and has a 7-layer, so real special material, so keeps product inside safe. So it's just a fruit snack on the go that you can eat it directly from pouch anywhere you want.
Now, how did you get a hold of the packaging?
The packaging, yes. When I was in fifth grade, I went to an excursion to Italy, and I stopped at a gas station, and I found there a product similar in that kind of packaging. It was lemonade. So I bought this product, and I brought it home, and I showed it to my mom. And my mom already had this product at home, so we were laughing, and we said, this is our destiny. We have to do something with this packaging. So 10 years later, we are here in the United States introducing our product, E4B, in that kind of packaging.
Yeah, now back up.
Hold on a second. How do you actually buy the package? I mean, someone made it for NASA, and now you buy it from them?
NASA, in Japan, there was an inventor who invented this packaging, and he did it for NASA astronauts. And then also this person, now he has a patent for this packaging, and a company in Italy bought this patent, and they are producing now this packaging for many products in Europe.
Oh, no kidding. It's an unusual packaging for us in the United States, but you're saying it's used much more widely in Europe.
Yeah, also in Asia, they are really familiar with this kind of packaging in Asia.
You and your mother are Slovenian.
Yeah, we are from Slovenia. It was a part of Yugoslavia before.
Yeah, we've been there.
Really?
Yeah, we took, I think, about 10 steps into Slovenia in
from Friuli.
In Gorizia. Right in the center of Gorizia, it was really curious. There was a busload of people who perhaps had never seen Western Europe before who pulled up to the center of the town square in front of the city hall.
Yeah.
And then they sheepishly wandered across the border. And we did the same going the other way. I think we didn't want to go too far in case we didn't get to come back.
Yeah, that was the times was really hard. Especially my mom, she had company for 30 years in Slovenia. And you can imagine before it was a communist country.
Yeah,
and it was really hard to have a company there.
Yeah, it's
and
amazing.
She was trying to survive.
Now, is it true that there used to be barbed wire right down the border?
I don't know. I'm too young.
Oh, you're too young. Okay.
I'm too young. I don't remember.
You can't remember that far back.
Yeah.
Nico,
yes.
So your mother was an entrepreneur.
Yes.
And you sort of fell into being an entrepreneur as well.
Because my grandfather, he was also an entrepreneur. He started a business called VP and was a beverage company. And my mom, when she was born, they started a company. My grandfather started this company. And she was also all the time in the entrepreneurial family. So when I was born, I was just the same as my mother. I was all the time at her business. I tried to help, and I learned a lot. So
now this product is very nutritional. It's basically giving you almost all of fresh fruit requirements. And you on your packaging you specify that each pouch contains 100% blended fruit. Now it's pureed. It's not liquid.
Yes.
And so you will have like mango, two mangoes, one apple, and a third of banana.
Yes.
And kiwi. One kiwi, one passion fruit, and one apple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the best one is blueberry raspberry. which has 110 blueberries, 6 raspberries, a half a banana, and 1.5 apples.
Now, right. do you count them out? You're sure there's 110?
Yeah. Well, we've made a lot of products in one time, so we just know how much it goes, and then we divide it by the pouch. But it's around there, 110 blueberries.
Are you making these, or does someone make them for you?
They are produced in Belgium, and we decided for a Belgian company because they have that kind of filling machine for that kind of packaging, and also because they have one of the best fruits there.
Okay, so the fruit is, some of it's local to Belgium, and then the more exotic ones like mangoes, they come in from somewhere else?
Yes, yes.
I didn't bring one of the packaging things with me, but I on the back of your packaging, you have something about love me, squeeze me. Could you read that?
Yeah, it's twist me, squeeze me, eat me, love me.
Why is that?
I don't know. We were just, thinking how to say in a few words how to use this product, because a lot of people think they don't know that they can eat it directly from pouch. So we were thinking how to describe this, how to use it. And first we were thinking to put maybe pictures, but then we said, let's just do something with words, play with words. So we came up with this.
Well, I mean, it's an incredible sensation to be just squeeze and suck it in, and it's very addictive.
Yeah. Now, Anne says I'm spoiling the product because I use it in a different way, because I'm not just looking for the nutrition, but also to make a thirst-quenching drink. So
yes.
what I do is I squeeze some portion of the flavor that I want into a glass, and then I add sparkling mineral water, and then I stir it up with a spoon.
Oh, really?
Now, Anne says that's the wrong thing to do, but I find it's a great product that way, too.
No, that's interesting. I would like that recipe.
It's really how much would you like to squeeze in, and then how much mineral water would you like to add? So it depends how much concentration of flavor you want.
Yeah.
Explain how you got to the U.S.
How I got to the U.S.? Yeah, I played basketball for Slovenia national team and for high school, and I always had a dream to play one day on a college in the United States. So one of my coaches from Slovenia helped me to get to the high school in California. So my senior year in high school, I played in California. And then for 1 year, for my freshman year in college, I went to Oregon to play for junior college. So I made my dreams, and I played one year, I played on a college basketball in the United States. And that's how I came to the United States. And when I was in Oregon, I lived by myself, and I realized that I really miss the smoothies that my mom makes them. So we start talking, and that's how we came up with E4B. So we then decided to move everybody, all my family, to move to New York, and we introduced E4B.
Oh, it's what a wonderful, wonderful romantic story that is.
Yeah.
And also a really good business story, a good model for business. Huh?
There's a website, and there are undoubtedly distribution channels for E4B, so why don't we make sure that listeners, now they're excited about it, now they should know how to get some.
Yeah, well, the easiest way is to get E4Bs is just to go to e4b.com, and we have their online store, and all orders include free shipping, and they will be delivered in 2 to 3 days. You will receive it at home. And they don't need to be refrigerated. They can be stored at home temperature, so at room temperature, and they can last up to 6-9 months.
But after
the packaging.
After it's open, though, it needs to be refrigerated.
After it's open, it needs to be. You can refrigerate it, and they will last 5 to 6 days. If you do not refrigerate, they will still last for 3 days.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
So now let me make sure that the listeners have this website, because it's the letter E, the numeral 4, and the letter B.
Yes.
So that, okay. So
.com.
Yes.
Yes.
And do you also distribute through retailers?
Yes, we also distribute to retailers. We were approved in Whole Foods for northeastern region. And mostly we are right now in New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania here. But we would like to get to the West Coast and the South and meet.
So, I was trying to sell my gym on it. That I think it would be great for gyms.
Yes, that's true.
I don't have much of a sweet tooth, but it's so fresh tasting, your purees. But I was thinking, couldn't you do the same thing for veggies that you did for fruit so that you could, because it's hard eating all those.
Yes, this is one of the next steps that we would like to do that we are in process of doing is also a vegetable smoothie, so vegetable purees, which would be more like a salty. But, you know, a lot of people say that salt is not good for you, but we find out that there's a salt from Himalaya, from Asia.
The pink stuff.
I don't know if it's a pink, but it's like a Himalayan, it's called Himalayan salt.
Yeah,
It has all the vitamins and minerals that body needs, and it's healthy. So we would like to make some vegetable purees that would be salty. And also right now we are in process of doing protein snacks, also in that kind of packaging.
Oh, really?
And that kind of form.
Well, would you keep us posted? Would you put us on your mailing list so that we know what these products are and when they're coming out?
Yes, of course. And we will send you some samples so that you have a pleasure to try them.
Well, I just think it's a wonderful story and a wonderful product. Some idea, you say that the EB4 retails at $3.49 to $3.99 per pouch in
yes.
store.
Yeah.
$29.99 per case, and that's 10 pouches.
Yeah.
And that's through you, through on your website with free shipping. That's good for all that fresh food.
Yes. I mean, we are trying to get to the customers with the best product, the easiest way, and also the best price.
What does your mother think of all this?
My mother, she's really happy. She's every day we come here, we are really happy that we can work together. I learn from her so much because she has so much experience. And she's really happy because she never pushed me into the business. She was happy that I play basketball, but after I decided I would like to go to business, now she's really happy that she can teach me and that we can be together.
Now, will you go back to playing basketball?
Well, I play basketball just recreational,
okay.
And I really like that because nobody tells me how to play basketball. I can play it however I want. So I think that this is how I would like to play basketball.
Are you very tall?
Yeah, I'm 6'6".
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and a lot of people is asking me how did I grow up so much, and I was always joking that because of strawberry banana smoothie.
Well, there you go. You should have your picture. I think you ought to have your picture on the cover.
Yeah. Yeah, and one of my friends from Slovenia, I said to them this when I was in seventh grade, and like two years ago, he convinced me that he's still eating strawberry banana because I told him, and I was really surprised that he believed me.
Well, listen, Nico, it's been a real treat to sample your product and to talk to you, and please give our best to your mother as well.
Okay, I will. Thank you very much
for
having
me. Well, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And we'll take a break, listeners.
T1 Internet access wasn't affordable to many companies as little as 2 years ago. Service providers were charging in the thousands of dollars, keeping the benefits of a T1 connection out of most companies' reach. ASP Station is now offering the faster and more reliable T1 service at a price significantly less than 2 years ago. The speed of a T1 for both sending and receiving data is simply amazing and will change the way your business runs indefinitely. You'll wonder how you ever lived without it. Call ASP Station now for details, 412-661-6001, 412-661-6001. Log on aspstation.net for more information. ASP Station, it's the way to go, fast.
Call ASP Station now for details, 412-661-6001. That's 412-661-6001. Log on aspstation.net for more information. ASP Station, it's the way to go, fast.
What is it about food that evokes such warmth and excitement this time of year? Whether it's a simple homemade cookie or an elaborate turkey dinner, the warmth of food comes from sharing it. Sharing Food is at the heart of Table magazine. Table is the first and only publication for Pittsburgh and southwestern Pennsylvania that celebrates food for our region. Read about local farms, fresh produce, new recipes, old recipes, great chefs, and inspiring regional road trips with tasty destinations. The holiday issue of Table is available online now. now, and subscriptions are the perfect gift. At www.tablemagazine.com, you can order Table for One for $14.95, Table for Two for $24.95, or make it a party with Table for Four for only $39.95. That's four subscriptions for only $10 each for the whole year. Talk about a gift of food that won't go bad. So if you're craving the perfect way to feed the imagination of friends or family who are ready to devour all the best our region has to offer, subscribe today at www.tablemagazine.com.
Influenza is a serious disease.
Are you talking to me?
If you have asthma, diabetes, or other chronic medical conditions, yes.
Are you talking to me?
If you're 50 or older, yes. If your child is between 6 and 23 months, yes.
Are you talking to me?
If you live or work with those at high risk, yes. Influenza will kill as many as 36,000 people this year. It's that serious. Prevent influenza. Get immunized. A message from the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases.
Welcome back to On the Menu. You're listening to Ann and Peter Haig. Reminder, as always, check out our website, www.onthemenuradio.com, for all the latest dish. And we have on the line our second guest, Matt and Ted Lee. There's kind of a cross between Good Southern Boys and Manhattanites.
Well, there's a name in there somewhere. I guess your great-grandfather, great-great-great-grandfather, Robert E., I guess, lived in Virginia.
Well, we've benefited from that last name.
I'm sure you have.
We're actually from New York.
Yes.
We're the Lees of New York. I don't think we are related to Robert E., but the Southerners don't know the difference, and so they've embraced us with open arms.
Now, let's say that what we're going to be talking about is the Lee Brothers Southern Cookbook, which is heavy. I can't quite lift it off the table, but absolutely marvelous. It's classic. Everybody should get this.
Thank you.
Yeah, and we're going to check out our website. We're going to put this up on our website. So the people can order it. You have an interesting tale. First of all, let's go back and say you were born in New York.
Right.
And you moved with your family to Charleston?
Charleston, South Carolina, right.
One of my most favorite
cities. About 1979, when we were little.
Okay. For business, probably.
Oh, well, not our business at the time, but our parents were just looking to get out of New York. They had three kids, and times were not so good. They had their third car stolen off of Riverside Drive, and they just jumped at it.
I've had a car broken into in Riverside Drive.
This was the days of what we laughingly call the bankrupt Apple, right?
Right. Exactly.
Okay, then you went to school. And set up how you discovered your business, because you have not just this cookbook, but you have a full-fledged business.
Right. We grew up in Charleston. You know, after we moved, we were so enamored of the foods and how close people live to their sources of food. In Charleston, people go learn to crab and they learn to shrimp. There are a lot of fishermen and huntsmen. And we just thought it was so exotic coming from the big city to know that we were taught how to go crabbing, and you just right at the bottom of our street.
Yeah, it's fun, isn't it, actually?
Yeah.
You throw the chicken neck. Is that
Yeah, exactly. You tie a string around a chicken neck and just throw it in the water and wait until the crabs come. And we ended up, you know, growing up fundamentally in Charleston, and so all through our adolescence and high school and everything, and we became, you know, Southern food became a part of, it just became food to us. And then so we went to college in the Northeast and suddenly recognized, oh my gosh, you know, boiled peanuts are not everywhere. You know, we had assumed growing up in the South that these foods existed
pretty much
everywhere.
But I've never, ever eaten boiled peanuts. I can't get anybody. We have a son and daughter-in-law and a new grandbaby, actually, in Greenwood, South Carolina.
Yeah.
And I never could. We were just visiting them, and they would never stop for boiled peanuts. They just kept saying nasty.
Oh, you must. They're wonderful.
Well, we'll be back there
later. They are an acquired taste.
I see.
And the difference is that they're made from raw peanuts. They aren't roasted, and so they have more of that legume character, more of a bean-like flavor. But if you like edamame,
too,
the boiled soybeans, you'll love boiled peanuts.
I love edamame. That's
good.
Great.
Well, then you must try them next time you drive by.
That's when we go to see the
grandbaby. But what happened? As we read in the book, you found yourself in New York, and you needed also to support yourself?
After college, we found ourselves in New York and sort of at a loss for what to do. Ted found a real job in publishing. He had studied writing, right? You were writing short stories.
And I was trying to be a fiction writer and thinking that maybe if I went into publishing, that would be a good thing to
And I had studied art history.
Well, I sympathize with you because I studied art history as well.
Yeah.
That is a good way to
start.
A lot of
people did. Food writers.
Yeah, Ruth Reichel did too, yeah.
But I wasn't getting anywhere with Christie's and Sotheby's. I thought the auction business was sort of the thing for me, and it was not. But I discovered that pretty quickly on and had no job at all and was very depressed and wondering what to do with myself. And I hit on the idea, well, because this is what you do in South Carolina if you need to make a buck, is you boil peanuts and you set up by the side of the road and you generate cash immediately without a lot of effort. The effort for us in New York was finding raw peanuts. They just weren't available.
Right.
And so we did the research and asked around. And we ended up at the huge Hunts Point Terminal Market where all the produce that comes into Manhattan, sort of Ellis Island of produce, sort of, it all funnels through there in the Bronx. And we found them there. And so we started boiling in our tenement apartment. We hit the streets trying to peddle them to bars mostly, thinking that making them a hip bar snack was the way to go. They're so popular in Charleston, South Carolina. Why can't we do it up here?
Mm-hmm.
In New York, where everyone's got, you know, these adventurous tastes. You know, there's nothing food-wise, pretty much, that you can't get in New York. So why not something that's just down I-95, 11-hour drive from New York? Well, it didn't work.
Yeah,
the bars didn't want to have anything to do with this foreign-tasting peanut, this unusual peanut. And when they reached out to touch it, it was damp. It's wet because you ladle it right out of the pot.
So,
that was
a
total failure.
You did discover a market also other homesick Southerners, right?
So then we thought, well, if it's too difficult to explain it to the bars and restaurants, let's just go with the people like us who know Southern food and love it and don't need the whole education about it. And so we sort of named a retail price, which seemed exorbitant to us at the time, $4.50 a pound, and we started bagging them up in large 5-pound bags and hooking up with Federal Express and UPS and just getting them there, any means necessary. And it worked. And people, you know, were so grateful. And they started asking us for other things. You know, can you also get me Duke's Mayonnaise, which is a grocery store brand of mayonnaise that's very popular in North and South Carolina. And they asked for Stone Ground Grits. And they asked
for... So you touch on some of these things in your book.
Yeah. And so these have become part of our family now, like this whole category of regional Southern foods that don't really travel beyond the South and are delicious and are worth everyone's recognition and attention. Like, we all should be making, you know, whole fig preserves at home and spreading it on our morning biscuits.
And watermelon rind pickle. I grew up on that, too.
You did?
Yeah, but my grandmother used to make it.
Now, it's a long way from this operation, though, to a cookbook half the size of the Encyclopedia Britannica. So,
right. Another part of the story.
Yeah, take us down that part of the story, please.
Yeah, Ted, go ahead.
One of our customers happened to be the editor-in-chief of Travel and Leisure magazine, and she called us up one day out of the blue and said, oh, we've been getting your catalog. We think that you could write a great travel story for us. And
about
South Carolina, you know, show us a part of South Carolina we haven't seen in the magazine before. And so we did that. We wrote an article, and we got paid to go out on the road, you know, in their rented car and just eat whatever
it was like a dream come true.
Silly on barbecue. It was a total dream come true. And then a few other magazines saw that story, which was around 1999, and the Food and Wine called and said, oh, we want to do a story exactly like that, but about Northern Florida. So we went to Northern Florida, and then one by one, we started pitching like the New York Times dining section, because we were having such fun and picking up so much material that we sort of created this new career writing, which was a great thing because it satisfied our yearn to travel and really experience
and
new
to write
and to write
to you know, express your love of food and to your excitement and what you've learned and to share it with people through print, was just, it opened up a great avenue for us, and this sort of double life of being proprietors of a little zine-like mail order catalog on the one hand in Charleston, and then on the other hand, the sort of globe-trotting travel and food writers been a fun combination for us.
It sounds a lot like On the Menu Radio.
Now, give us
We think it's fun too.
Yeah, I mean the food business is fantastic. Every which way you slice it, it has its drawbacks, yes, but it's about something that everyone can relate to, eating, and it involves people, and anything with people and personalities is inherently attractive.
Now you both are lanky, and you look like brothers, and there's a 2 years difference, right?
Yes, right.
Because my first question was, are you twins, and you're not.
No, so. Matt's 2 years older than I am.
Yeah.
Which you constantly remind him of.
Yeah, sure.
Yes, or the other way around.
How do people reach you? Do you have a website?
Oh, yeah. We've got, for the cookbook, we set up a new one that we're excited about. It's our byline, mattleeandtedlee.com. And the "and" is spelled out. But we also are mail order catalog can be reached at boiledpeanuts.com. As simple as that.
Oh, that's cute.
No, that's nice. That's nice and simple. Now, onto the cookbook. Then, so you started writing articles, but then you went a long way beyond that.
Right. Well, we found that when we started writing, a lot of our editors would say, "Oh, we'd really love to publish some recipes along with your story about Eastern Kentucky. Can you develop some recipes that would distill the experience of this journey?" And that indulged our interest in cooking, which we've been doing since we were 12 and 13 years old, sort of just as a hobby. But this was a real chance, 6 or 7 years ago, to start getting in the kitchen and developing recipes in a serious fashion and codifying them for publication to a national audience. You know, when you put a recipe in the New York Times, it has to work.
Yeah, well, this is true. Did you test all your own recipes?
Sort of the recipe development aspect of food writing
you tested your own recipes?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
We were required to. But then we also experienced, what happens when you think your recipe is perfect and then you hand it off to a third-party recipe tester? Well, you find that there are things that you didn't even see in that recipe.
That's
that could
why
have been
I asked
perfected.
You that.
It's a fascinating process. Yeah. And with our cookbook, we sent every recipe out. After we had hashed it out, this process took like 5 years, mind you. After Ted and I had, to our satisfaction, done our recipe, we sent it off to a recipe tester who, sent back an amazing brief with all these wonderful suggestions for steps that could be cut or a different kind of step that would bring out more flavor or a way to make the recipe more viable for people who can't get their hands on blue crabs, for example, or, any number of wonderful tweaks and suggestions that really made the recipes, more accurate or made them pop or made them more relevant for a wider range of people.
Now, some of the recipes you developed, others, I guess, you picked up on your travels and then people allowed you to use them?
We found very few recipes, handed to us in our travels.
Okay, all right.
It's surprising how, Ted mentioned Eastern Kentucky, Northern Florida. It was more that we encountered dishes that excited us.
Okay.
And so in the kitchen, we tried to reverse engineer them.
Okay. Now I get the sense of it. So you talk about places that you went, and this is where you ate this, and it gave you the idea, but then you actually developed the recipe until it tasted like what you had had there.
That's
exactly
right. For example, in Upper Kentucky, practically more Cincinnati than Kentucky, we had at the Greyhound Grill amazing fried chicken, but we also had this amazing little Melmac side dish of something called hot slaw, which was simply cabbage.
I wanted to get into that, but we're going to have to take a break now.
Oh,
can you just hang on? We'll do some ads.
Sure.
Great. We'll take a break.
Furnace working okay? How's your heating bills? You know, no kidding, an old or inefficient furnace can really add to the cost of keeping your home warm. If you want to keep costs down, get your furnace looked at, and I recommend Bolster to Heart Heating and Air Conditioning for that. The technicians at Bolster DeHart have been performing routine maintenance and installing high-efficiency heating and air conditioning systems in Pittsburgh since 1977. They're EPA-certified professionals who are continually factory-trained in all the latest installation and service techniques. They offer free estimates and don't even charge extra for Saturday service. They're a quality dealer you can trust. Stay warm this winter at the lowest possible cost. Call Bolster DeHart Heating and Air Conditioning at 412-367-3900. Maintenance or installation, Bolster DeHart Heating and Air Conditioning, 412-367-3900.
Mommy, for my birthday, I want a princess party.
Give your little girl a party she'll remember forever from Sweet Pea Parties.
Mommy, this is wonderful.
Sweet Pea Parties will send out beautiful handmade invitations and then bring decorations, princess gowns to dress up in, fabulous favorite bags, real linen and china, fun games, even a real princess to transform your home into your child's fantasy wonderland.
Do they do parties for boys, too?
You bet they do. Safari adventures, pirates and dinosaur themes for the boys, princess, diva, and spa parties for the girls.
Yay! Yay! Woohoo!
Our hostesses make your party effort-free. They'll even send out thank you notes featuring each child's personal photo from the party. See for yourself at www.sweet-p-parties.com or call them 412-805-9623. Sweet Pea Parties, 412-805-9623.
Mommy, this was the best party ever.
Hi, everyone. This is Tom Rita, the networking guy and host of Pittsburgh's most unique business show, Business in the Fast Lane. We're on every Saturday morning from 12 noon to 1 p.m. right here on The Edge, 1550 a.m. For the past 24 months, we've been bringing the best and the brightest into our studios to offer you ideas, advice, and real-world examples to help you grow your business. So save those honeydews for the afternoon and join me, Tom Rita, every Saturday morning from 12 to 1 on The Edge for Business in the Fast Lane, Pittsburgh's best kept secret.
You are listening to The Edge, AM 1550, WURP, Braddock, Pittsburgh.
You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig and Matt and Ted Lee. We're talking about their experiences in the world of Southern cuisine, and particularly their hefty, gorgeous, beautifully photographed, I might add, I'm getting very hungry, cookbook.
Now, let's not forget, we just talked in the break, we were just talking to Matt and Ted about the fact that they are going to be doing a presentation, a demonstration at the Charleston Food and Wine Festival coming up at the beginning of March, and On the Menu is also going to be attending that, so don't forget to check your calendar. It's www.charlestonfoodandwinefestival, I think it's totally spelled out, .com, and it's going to be a great event. We know because Matt and Ted told us it was going to be.
Now, you were talking about Eastern Kentucky. We have a very close friends. We have very close friends from Western Kentucky, and they put us in touch with a Broadbent. Do you know that product?
Hams, yes.
Yeah, well, we like the bacon. Actually, we like the bacon chunks, whatever.
Yeah, the bacon and the ham bits.
Oh, all those great seasoning meats, yeah.
Yeah, and she makes something really strange called Burgaloo.
Burgoo, yeah.
We have
a recipe for that in our book, in fact.
I saw this, and I thought, that's not how it's spelled, from what she said.
It's a stew that just really celebrates times of plenty in a certain part of Kentucky, and so it's got corn and beans and tomatoes.
But you spell it with a P. She spells it with a B.
Yeah, we're saying Burgoo, B as in boy, U R.
Yeah.
G as in girl, O-O.
Oh, it's in here with a P.
No, it's not. It's in here with a B. I'm looking it up. I'm looking it up right now.
Well, I was looking it upside down.
Well, then that explains it, doesn't it?
You were probably thinking of Purloo.
Oh, Purloo is the one.
Which is a totally different dish. That's a rice dish that's common in Charleston in the Low Country.
Okay.
And the rice growing has its roots in Northern Africa, as a matter of fact.
Really?
And a fantastic sort of one-pot rice and chicken dish.
Now, this is the legend of Burgoo. You, in a large hunting party, you put everything in it, including bear, deer, squirrel, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
It's in everything but the kitchen sink kind of dish, but it's wonderful. We've pared it down to more approachable meats.
Right. It's amazing how she and her husband grew up like just one town away on a over a mountain or a hill, mm-hmm. and they have totally different foods.
Yeah, that's we found it in Kentucky, especially in beans. You know, you'll find one bean variety that's named for, you know, the property of the family that it grows on. And then on the other side of the mountain, they'll have a completely different
exactly.
variety of bean that looks different, that tastes different,
and
it's named for that family's property.
Right.
It's just the amount of genetic variation in beans from place to place yeah. in Kentucky is fantastic.
Now, tell me, I have this feeling, I sort of sense trends. There is some great resurgence in people's seeking out Southern cooking.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true, and why?
I think it's because people are awakening, and I think Americans in general are awakening to the fact that Southern food really has so many regions. It's really like a cuisine that differs from, you know, the mountain south to the coast to down to New Orleans. You know, it's a lot like Italian food in that sense.
Uh-huh.
You know, we've just gotten used to the fact that, you know, the cooking in Tuscany is different from the cooking in Piemonte, and that's something that sort of came about in the 80s, where it's like, okay, it's not just red sauce. Every region has its own cuisine, and I think Southern cuisine offers the satisfaction of, you know, when you delve into it, you find so much. You're rewarded,
but, you know, isn't
so
it
quickly.
Isn't it a counter trend, though, to the nation's obsession? I mean, literally obsessive involvement with healthful dining. It's not the health.
No, I think that they work in the same direction. Once you realize that Southern food is diverse and has, you know, tons to offer, you will discover that Kentucky cuisine, at least in the Appalachian part, is built on vegetables more than it is anything else.
Uh-huh.
We traveled for 7 days in eastern Kentucky, and it wasn't until the sixth one that we realized, oh my gosh, we haven't had, you know, a piece of meat in 6 days, and we didn't miss them because they know how to prepare tomatoes and onions and beans so well, and they garnish them so creatively with cornbread and chopped, minced raw onion, and they have all these strategies for making, you know, great flavors emerge from homegrown ingredients.
Of course, what people actually, we were in Savannah, and we went to Mrs. Wilkes Boarding House.
Right.
And, I mean, there were 25 dishes on the table.
Yeah, there were more kinds of Southern food that you didn't want to eat than any place we'd ever been.
Well,
fried
that's the
chicken
thing. There
and
are,
fried this.
You know, feeding holes where you just get sort of this genericized, gloppy buffet service that you encounter throughout the whole country. I mean, it's the sort of, you know, truck stop buffet stuff that you encounter in Minnesota just as easily as you do in Arkansas.
So this was not traditional Southern.
I mean, that whole, like, you know, Southern food is more than just macaroni and cheese and fried chicken and mashed potatoes smothered with gravy.
Well, this is a strange, unless you've been there, I mean, let me just take a moment to explain. Before you sit at your table, which you sit in the communal tables of 10, they put the 25 dishes of food on the table.
Right.
So they're already there when you get there.
Beginning to solidify on the top.
It's the most bizarre thing.
It's boarding house dining.
That's what it is.
Well, it's called Mrs. Wilkes Boarding House. That's probably
yeah.
why.
Well, that idea of communal dining appeals to me. It's how they pull it off that, you know, makes the difference.
Exactly. Now, uh-huh. at the other end of the scale, we were with Chef Bob Carter at the Peninsula Grill.
Right.
And he served this absolutely fabulous oyster stew with some kind of rice or grits in the bottom. But he said the secret ingredient is veal stock.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, you see, today, Southern food has so many more influences going for it because people have traveled more and picked up influences in France or wherever, you know, Japan. It almost doesn't matter. You know, it's still Southern food. And Bob Carter is one of the few chefs that we consistently encounter at the new farmers market. In the last 10 years, mm-hmm. these farmers markets have begun in the Charleston area that didn't really exist before. Bob is someone we see there prowling the markets looking for, you know, fresh, locally grown vegetables. I mean, that's something you wouldn't have had on a Charleston menu, fresh, locally grown vegetables, as recently as, you know, 20 years ago.
Now, Bob Wagoner makes wonderful collard greens.
Well, he's French trained.
But he makes collard greens with, and then he uses Cabernet Sauvignon vinegar, I think,
in place
to
of vinegar.
To, to, finish them off.
Yeah,
right. He's talked
fabulous.
About that dish on a show that we did devoted to collard greens. And
I love that dish.
They're amazing. They're the most decadent collard greens in this country, I'm willing to wager.
I think I'd like to make those. Do you have a recipe like that in this book? You have many collard green recipes. Peter was fascinated with your difference between the Sunday and the Tuesday.
And I guess there are probably Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday collard greens too.
That's right.
In fact, we had Wednesday collard greens. We had Monday collard greens and Wednesday collard greens this week.
Right. Well.
And do you know the Woodlands at Somerville?
Yes.
Isn't that chef absolutely fabulous? Tarver King.
Oliver King, yes.
No, Tarver. Tarver King.
We actually haven't been there since he took the helm.
Yeah.
We went a couple times when Ken Vidrinsky was the
chef. This guy he's in charge now. And, I mean, he was at the Little Washington. He was, mm-hmm. I mean, he is good, fabulous. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and 28 years of age.
Now, the other people to look out for are Ben and, what's his name?
Karen Barker.
From Magnolia.
Oh,
Grill.
Yeah.
Magnolia's Ted is Barrickman.
No, but they're talking, Karen and Ben Barker
In Durham.
In Durham.
Right. That's right,
yeah,
Durham.
They're
North.
Wonderful.
And they're supposed to be in Charleston, too, and it was so much fun. He won James Beard Award, Best Chef Southeast, and then 2 years later, she won Best Pastry Chef in the country. It was so nice to see the recognition that they got.
They're wonderful. They're fantastic.
And it gives you an idea that this food is indeed on the culinary map.
Right.
Oh, absolutely.
So here, listeners, you have not only you have the encyclopedia of how to go about doing it, stories to go along with that that say this is why we do this. This is where this comes from.
The stories.
This is what it's all about. This is how we found out about this. And they write with wonderful language. They write with words like Miss Anne sitting beside
Thank
me.
You.
So, how to make grits for a throng? I mean, how many people in the United States even know what a throng is?
You'd be surprised.
You'd be surprised how many do or how many don't.
How many do?
Well, I mean, what's next? I mean, after finishing a cookbook, you must be exhausted.
Oh, it feels great, actually, at this point, to be beyond that stage where you're just sending drafts back and forth and lose perspective on where the ground is.
Well, let's do a quick recap. It's the Lee Brothers, Matt Lee and Ted Lee. Their website is www.mattleeandtedlee.com. The website for their food catalog is www.boilpeanuts.com. You see how quickly I remember that? The book is called The Lee Brothers Southern Cookbook. I think, listeners, it's something you should explore. And we're certainly going, we're going to start cooking down-home Southern style in our kitchen real
right
soon.
Right on.
Because I got to use all those ham bits.
Right. That's right. We've got 1,000 ideas for doing that.
Yeah, well, this is what makes it all so tasty.
And we will look forward to seeing you in Charleston, South Carolina. We know what you look like. You'll have to go to www.onyourmenuradio.com so you can see what we look like, and then when we see each other, we'll know who we are.
That's great. Yeah, we'll be holding mint julep cups.
And we will so much look forward to seeing you, and thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, you've been so much fun, and
it's
this cookbook's wonderful. Thank you both.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And we'll take a break.
Hi, friends. I'm Phil Marcus, the host of Real Estate 101, heard every Saturday here on The Edge, AM 1550. If you've been thinking about selling your house or buying a house, I'd like to speak with you. Choosing the right agent is one of the first and most important steps in the process of buying or selling real estate. It's critical that you choose an agent who has the knowledge and experience to not only find that perfect new home for you, but to also be able to guide you step by step through the often complicated real estate process. If you don't already have a realtor, may I offer my services? I've been a real estate agent in Pittsburgh for almost 30 years. I'm a life member of the Realtors Association, and I'm proud to say that I've earned both the GRI and the coveted CRS professional designations. Won't you call me at RE/MAX Heritage? The phone number is 412-241-4200, extension 154, or my email address is phil@philmarcus.com. That's 412-241-4200, extension 154, or phil@philmarcus.com. Let's talk.
The internet is crucial to your business. Everybody knows this, but did you know Nidhogg is the company you should call for internet service? Nidhogg. personal webpage hosting for less. Business webpage hosting, Nidhogg offers both Unix and NT server support. Nidhogg is the company you should call for dedicated internet access. Nidhogg offers DSL for high-speed, low-cost, always-on access. DSL is great. It means no more dial-up. Oh, by the way, do you remember that thing called the telephone? Do you remember when people used phone lines to access the internet? Oh, I'm sorry, you still use dial-up? Well, Nidhogg does that too. Local access telephone numbers? Okay, I don't understand it all either, but I do know that I need it, and I know where to get it. Nidhogg, Nidhogg.com, 412-661-5917. That's 661-5917, or log on, Nidhogg.com. Internet the Nidhogg way.
Have you been jazzing around yet? It's Sundays from 10 to 12 here on 1550. Get a taste of the latest jazz albums, a concert and club calendar, birthdays, awards, obituaries, and more. Plus featured artist interviews. That's a lot of jazzin'. Check it out for yourself. Sponsored in part by Martini's Route 885 Jefferson, Original Recipe Italian Cooking, and Spider Mondanelli's Pittsburgh Jazz Giants, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Jazzin' around. Sundays, 10 to 12, here on 1550 The Edge.
Welcome back to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig, and a new guest, a new segment and a new guest. Welcome to John Roscoe Schwartz, who is a designer and co-founder of a company that we've fallen in love with called Built New York.
But
welcome.
Built New York doesn't really describe the company sort of all that well. So no. John Roscoe Schwartz, perhaps you can explain.
I'd love to. We founded this company a little more than 3 years ago now on the desire to bring beautifully and simply designed products to market that are affordable. That's been our goal. That's guided us every step of the way. And we feel that's visible in all the products that we make.
Now, where are you located?
So tell us about the products.
Well, where are you located, first of all?
We're located at Spring and Broadway in Soho in downtown Manhattan.
Okay. Are you New Yorkers, of course? Cooper Union?
I'm a transplanted New Yorker. I grew up on a farm in Ohio, actually.
Oh, really? What part of Ohio?
Near Chillicothe.
Oh, my.
Okay. South Central,
Ohio. It's a tiny town in the south, not far from the Kentucky border.
Right. Now, are you Cooper Union grads?
No, we are Cranbrook grads.
Oh, Cranbrook. Because I went to school in Ann Arbor.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now we know where you're coming from.
Yeah.
Let's talk about these products.
Okay. Well, the first product that we designed with Built New York was actually a high-end leather wine bag for carrying wine. A good friend of ours is a wine importer. He asked us to design a bag for his sales staff to carry that was functional, but also beautiful and stylish.
I have a leather one just like that, but I quit using it now because I'm using something in its place. I wonder what it could be.
Well, what we found was that it was just too expensive, and that it didn't fit with our larger goal, which was to develop products that were affordable for everybody. We went back to the drawing board. We started by looking for a material that would fit the function of carrying two bottles of wine safely and insulate it while it was doing that, and also accommodate all the weird and different bottle shapes there are. We struck upon neoprene, which is one of many, many materials that we...
Now, what is neoprene?
Neoprene is it's commonly known as the wetsuit material.
Uh-huh.
It's that stretchy, spongy rubber that divers use and surfers use to keep themselves warm in the water.
And you can really dye it beautiful colors. I mean, the color of your products are just great. We have a bright red two-bottle carrier.
Oh, good.
Yeah?
Yeah, the colors.
And we have that lime
green. The color
green.
Is just fantastic.
Yeah, now, is that part of the material that absorbs those great colors or takes those?
Yes, it is. It's part of the surface skin of the material.
I see.
So it's wonderful in terms of color.
You know, I don't know if you were aware of this advantage. A number of years ago, I bought Peter a very expensive leather two-bottle carrier.
Which I have left in innumerable restaurants.
Leah, he's finishing my sentences again. But he kept leaving at places. With yours, you just, once you drink the wine and leave the bottles wherever you are, you can fold it up and stick it in your pocket.
Exactly. That's what we love so much about it, too. It's just so easy that way. You can just fold it up. All of our products are that way. They store flat. You can roll them up, put them in your pocket, when you're not using it, it's not this giant thing that you have to find a place for.
Yes,
it's actually a nice flat thing. You can throw it in the drawer with your placemat.
I have. That's where I put it.
So this is.
Just so you want to know, because yeah. I took it away from you.
Well, I know where it is now. You know, now it's lying on top of the wine cube. Where else would it go?
We have other ones, and we have the sippy cup bottle. Thing which we just
oh,
had
great.
We just had our first grandbaby, so that's going to South Carolina, and it's
oh,
lime green. It's lime green, which is exactly the color of the nursery walls. we were meant to meet and talk, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. It's my
tell
pleasure.
Us the other products. Tell us about the lunch container and the picnic thing.
Yeah, so we're foodies. And we basically design things for ourselves, things that we think that other people will like too. So we're interested in all things food and wine related. So we realized that there was an empty space for a functional, stylish lunch bag for adult, and that there turned out there's a lot of adults who like to bring their lunch to work, who are particular about what they eat. We designed our first lunch bag for them. It packs flat and has a unique shape that accommodates a bottle and a sandwich or a Tupperware of pasta. And that went so well that we designed another one. We call that one the Gourmet Getaway.
Yes, yes.
And that's even bigger to accommodate even more stuff.
And then you also have beer bottle versions.
We did a six pack.
And a six pack? I didn't see that one yet.
That one you'd really like as well for the pack flat part of it. We came up with a patent pending method for sewing together the six pack so that it expands like an accordion.
Oh.
So if you only have two, it's smaller.
Exactly. It's only as big as the number of bottles you're carrying in it.
Hey, what is it with the stitching? It's really decorative, too.
Thank you. There are very few details on our products. They're very minimal. They're very reduced. So we spend an enormous amount of time fussing over the little details that there are. And the stitching is one of the important parts to us.
It is lovely. And also you've got these drip collars.
Yeah, now there are two different kinds now. Explain to me why
different bottle shapes.
We have one that's that's what we thought, but let's be sure if that's true. We have one that sort of like it has a scarf or a collar, and then there's another one that just is snug to the side of the bottle.
They're actually the same item. The one that has a collar has been folded down, and the one that doesn't hasn't.
Well, that's why, actually.
Yeah, but why?
Yeah.
I mean, is there a reason why?
The reason why is that you can pull that collar down and over, and it provides the extra layer needed for catching the drips.
Okay.
You see, a lot of these are very popular, these drip things now. But a lot of them just get so icky. Now, this you can wash, right?
Yeah, you can throw it right in the wash.
Yeah. So, yeah, and they
all
always
of our
have
products, in fact, are machine washable.
Really?
Mm-hmm. But don't put them in with your whites, whatever you do.
That's right. Actually, they're color safe.
Oh, no, they're well. Yeah. I'm not going to try them out.
No,
yeah, don't. I wouldn't actually either.
No. What about your partner? Is it an anonymous?
I have two partners.
Okay.
And we founded the company. Aaron Lown, and Aaron and I met in graduate school at Cranbrook.
Uh-huh.
We discovered we had similar interests in terms of design and entrepreneurship. We had it in our mind to start a company someday. We both went on our separate ways after graduate school, and Aaron went on to design fashion accessories, and I went on to design furniture. And then in 2000, we started talking about doing some sort of collaborative effort together, and that culminated in Built. And in the meantime, when we got our first the two bottle tote designed, we realized that we had a great product and an ideology behind it that could support a great brand. And that's when we realized we needed a financial partner. And Carter Weiss joined us. The three of us have, with the help from a lot of fantastic people that have joined us through the last 3 years, we've built a nice little brand.
Now, can we do contact information? We don't want to miss out on website and where you can buy these products.
Yes, absolutely. Our website is www.BILT.com. Right. And that's BILTNY.com.
Okay, right. And you can buy them in Whole Foods?
You can buy them in Whole Foods. You can buy them at Sur La Table. You can buy them... you can buy them at REI.
Oh, yeah, I just passed one of those stores.
And you can go to our website, and there's a store locator there.
Okay.
You can type in your zip code, and you can get a list of the retailers in your area. Lots of great little independent shops selling our stuff, as well as some of the bigger ones.
How did you get to this point? I mean, did you do prototypes and peddle them, or what did you do?
We did lots of prototypes. And then we finally got the one we were sold on, and we had maybe a dozen of those made, and we showed them around, and everyone flipped for it. So we thought, hey, we've got a hit here. We cobbled together enough money to buy 10,000 pieces.
Of what?
Of the original two-bottle tote, and had them shipped in, and hoped and prayed that we'd sell them. And we went through those first 10,000 pieces in less than a month.
Really?
And then we knew we really were onto something.
this is a fabulous story. Now, what's next?
We have one thing that we're just introducing now is the question is, what does a laptop sleeve and a wine bottle have? A laptop and a wine bottle have in common?
The answer is they both need to be protected.
That's right, and
that's
neoprene
great.
Would be the common denominator.
Oh, I'd so love to see that. That's great. I'd love to see, instead of people walking around with these really dull cases, to see something in these colors. Oh, it'd be great.
Yeah, and we now have some beautiful patterns. We have stripes, and we have polka dots.
Oh, your stripes are wonderful. I have one of those, yeah.
Introducing a floral pattern, orchids, and polka dots. And then in the electric line, we have laptop sleeves and we have phone holders.
Yeah. And we've come to the end. We've had so much fun. We came to the end of the program.
The program was going to end.
That was great.
thank you so much for joining us, listener.
Love your product. Absolutely love
thank
it.
You.
Listeners, we'll see you same time, same place next week.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Jazzin' Around with David J. is next on The Edge, AM 1550.
What can I say about Real Estate 101 in just 10 seconds? Not much, but in a whole hour? Now that's a different story. Join me, Phil Marcus, each Saturday afternoon at 1 here on Pittsburgh's Talk Radio, The Edge, AM 1550.